Nocturne of the Defeated Hero. Where did the moon go? Here she is. There are two tonight, identical. A still, dense air. Vanilla shadows in the dull sky, the clouds move slowly. They entered the barn, they are purple, green. Again the owl, the crying of the Scops owl. The river is silent, not a breath of wind caresses the snake's skin. Slips into the lobe of the mouse, again, again, I hear you, little bastard, where are you? How many more times I'm cold, I'm alone. I grip my teeth, hold my breath, it's not easy, all of this really isn't easy. A deep breath, come on beautiful, it's done. And it's right that it happens right here. Love with life, love with death, why does it always end? That day I remember, there was a flat light and she stood up with an indolent smile. It's cold tonight. She looked at the expanse of the sea, stagnant liquid metal. She lingers on the hanger of her swimsuit, her back tanned. The hook snaps, the fabric elastically retracts. Look and don't touch. We are children's souls. A sip of bleach to return the virginity. Another sip, my love. It's a little strong, but it's good.
Quid albedo nisi integra castitas. Castitas, securitas mentis, sanitas corporis est.
Are you here?
Unusquisque nilles castus.
Oh yes, you are here.
Ad perpetuam requiem venire.
Who are you?
Et Deum. Videre non poterit.
It begins, finally. I was saying, what was I saying? Warrior virgin, androgynous body, narrow boy's hips. She faces the waves in knee-deep water. The cold caress rises to the groin. She tilts her head back. She cuts through the water as far away, her arms rise rhythmically. I am alone. No, I can hear you. Touch me. Touch me now, with your icy fingers. Again and again like this, please never end. Whose hands are these? I laugh convulsively. A sob escapes me that no one listens to.
God, there's something really comical about this.
Can you just tell me what, please? That stuff that lifts you up.
Hello, little brother. Can I talk to you?
No.
How would it be no?
I'm busy, can't you see? I'm packing.
I see. But where do you think you're going a few days before the oral exam?
None of your business.
Yes, that's my business. I'm your brother. Stop throwing stuff in your suitcase in bulk. You'll look like a bum if you put that stuff on all wrinkled.
What the fuck do you care about what I look like?
Sit down for a moment, please.
Don't give me orders. I'm an adult and I do what I want, even being a bum if I feel like it. I'm also leaving so that I no longer have anyone to decide what I should or shouldn't be.
Okay, I'll ask you again, please. Sit down.
I sit on the bed. 10 minutes, no more.
I'll grab a chair, okay? Try to calm down, you're too agitated. Your hands are shaking and your pupils are dilated. You look like a rabid cat.
What do you want?
What's wrong with you, little brother? It seems to me that your nerves are shot. You look like someone who hasn't slept in a week. You move jerkily like a puppet, and you don't talk to anyone anymore.
Who the fuck should I talk to? You all have other things on your mind. Your fucking wedding, preparations for the reception, and plans for the new house. Nobody cares about my exam.
Sorry, you're right. I've neglected you lately. But you have to understand that it all came upon me suddenly. I didn't think I would have to get married so soon.
And instead it's up to you. How unfortunate, huh?
Antonia is so strange lately.
There's nothing strange, she's just in the mood for marriage. A bitch in heat, that's all.
Strange way to put it, don't you think? Not very polite of you.
Who cares about politeness?
However, no, it's not that. There's something I don't understand, something I'm missing about her.
Don't ask me to help you understand it. That's your business, brother. Yours and of that goose who marries you.
Sorry, but goose, why?
What should I call someone who squawks around the house babbling about guests and wedding favors? I mean, the fucking wedding favors.
I understand that these things seem ridiculous to you. They seem so to me too. You know what I care about wedding favors, with my accountant mentality. Luckily, Mum and Antonia are taking care of it. But you have to understand her, poor thing. It's the first time she's getting married, and I hope also the last.
Poor thing? I mean, she marries you and she's a poor thing? However, yes, from a mental point of view she is a poor thing. She's unrecognizable. If I think that she once explained Plato to me, now she's practically an idiot.
Emmanuel, stop, you're exaggerating. If you were getting married in a few days, you would be just as nervous.
Yes, it can be. I don't know, I've never married and I'll never get married.
But enough about my marriage, let's talk about you. Where are you going?
To study in peace, if that's not too much to ask. Away from you and the mess that's here.
Do you already know what your second oral subject will be?
No, the second exam subject is drawn the day before, don't you remember?
I thought things had changed in the meantime. This test has been experimental for 27 years, precisely since 1969.
Interesting.
Which subject would you like?
I do not know. I only know what I don't want, physics. I hate it.
And I couldn't even help you, little brother, because I'll be on my honeymoon. I am sorry.
Try not to get diabetes.
But where are you moving to, if I may know?
Near the Eremo.
Ah, so not too far from here, luckily.
Just enough to keep you out of the way.
Coincidentally, right from Michelle's area. Are you back together?
Yes and no. We are good friends.
But pretend to believe it. So you live with her now?
No. She's on tour and won't be back for a month. The one I'm going to isn't her house. It's a large studio apartment belonging to one of her dance partners.
Given the area, it will be a bit expensive. How do you pay the rent?
I've put aside a little bit of money. That's enough for me for a month.
And then?
Then I don't know. In the meantime, I will have given the oral exam. I live day by day.
If you need money, tell me. I'll gladly give it to you.
Thanks. I don't need anything.
However, it is a fact that every time you're with Michelle, you become strange and unmanageable. That woman does not have a good effect on you. I hope you don't get the idea of getting engaged to her.
So, big brother, listen carefully. First, she's already engaged.
With whom?
With a certain Roberto Mora.
Ah, the dancer.
Second, if I'm so strange, it's certainly not her fault. Third, that woman is doing more for me right now than all of you put together. She's the only one who realized how I was. Saucepan understood me, Teresa understands me, she understands me, even if she pretends to treat me like shit. You, intelligent as you are, have never understood shit about me.
But what should we understand, Emmanuel? All I understand is that you want to be the center of attention like you always have been, and right now my wedding is stealing your show. Try to understand, it's not just you in the world.
That's enough, brother. The 10 minutes are up. I have nothing else to tell you.
You have nothing else to tell me in what sense?
Move, let me out. Don't try to stop me if you don't want to go to the altar with a blue eye. Because obviously you will get married in church, right? The two virgins.
What's the matter with you, Emmanuel? You have never been so aggressive.
Actually, yes. I have one thing to tell you. Everyone, go to hell.
Has your brain gone crazy?
Actually, no. I want to be more clear. Listen to me carefully. Fuck off, you, Dad, Mom, and that bitch Antonia.
But how dare you?
Say hello to them for me. I don't want to see them. I can't wait to be away from here and forget your faces.
Are you crazy?
Oh, maybe.
I hope at least you will come to my wedding.
I don't think so.
I would never forgive you, Emmanuel. I'm serious.
I'll get over it.
I would like you as my wedding witness.
Forget it.
But where are you going? Emmanuel!
Have a good life, brother.
Labyrinths.
The relatives of the spouses a little further to the left. Like this. Stop, please.
I smooth the skirt of my light blue suit and smile. The flash dazzles me for a moment, then we are finally free from the boring ritual of group photos. 500 kilometers to register for the wedding of a stranger. If it hadn't been for the insistence of my father, who, after his retirement, in order not to feel useless, entered into I don't know what business with the groom's family, I would now be in swimming pool with Luca, who for some time has become the most assiduous of my suitors. Too bad he's also the most insignificant. In general, I distrust the generosity with which fate bestows male admiration on young heiresses. I know well that Luca would be the first to stop seeing me if my father became too poor to afford the villa with swimming pool. With these conditions, he certainly cannot expect to be taken seriously. I started out taking into account the prospect of being bored to death, a task in which I would be succeeding perfectly, if it weren't for a crazy variable that has been putting me to the test for a few hours. I hate staring at people and being stared at, but there is among the groom's relatives a boy I can't take my eyes off. And not because he's beautiful. Okay, he's beautiful. But apart from the fact that it's not my style to look insistently at guys, I like Mediterranean, dark, healthy, and sporty men. He, on the other hand, is blonde, Nordic, and exudes a sick charm. that curiosity which my teachers interpret as an indication of uncommon intellectual vivacity, and which is actually my main flaw, makes me imprudent, attracted to what doesn't look like me. I admit that I am fascinated by phenomena that escape logic, and it is impossible for me to classify based on my mental categories, which are decidedly too Aristotelian, the effects boy has on me, especially his gaze. I could say that I feel a fatal attraction and at the same time, an alarm siren, a silent and desperate SOS. The shipwreck is happening before everyone's eyes. Is it possible that no one notices? I'm a good observer. I've been keeping an eye on him for a couple of hours, paying attention to the smallest details. During Mass, he never got up or sat down at the right time, as if he did it on purpose or was too confused to realize it. The lady next to him, tall and blonde, very elegant in her Luisa Spagnoli suit, continued to give him reproachful looks, but he showed no sign of noticing. While the couple swore eternal fidelity to each other, he was struck by an absolutely unseasonable coughing attack and brought his handkerchief to his face. I could have sworn that he had difficulty holding back his laughter. Then he snorted, got up and left, blowing his nose loudly. Overall, that boy always seems inappropriate. I deduce that he doesn't control his reactions. To confirm this suspicion, at the end of the service, I see him again in front of the church sitting astride a low wall, with his legs wide apart, his jacket thrown over his shoulder, his shirt sleeves rolled up, his hair disheveled, his eyes hidden by sunglasses, and an indecipherable smile on his lips. Once again, inappropriate. To be precise, inappropriately sexy. As if he thought he was on the cover of Playboy instead of at a wedding, so much so that I feel ashamed for him. But apparently, I'm the only one who notices it. All the others are distracted by the bride and groom. They crowd around them, applaud, throw handfuls of rice, demand the kiss, the ritual throwing of the bouquet. Nobody notices him, except the bride herself, a redhead with a slim physique, pretty in her short cream-colored dress, with her hair gathered behind her neck and a few orange flowers pinned in her chignon. I notice that he remains with his gaze stubbornly staring straight ahead, as if he doesn't even see her, while she can't help but give him brief, anxious glances from time to time. Maybe she's disconcerted by his attitude, maybe irritated, maybe attracted, who knows? As I make my way through the crowd of guests to congratulate the newlyweds, I suddenly see him get up and come next to me, so close that I can smell his musky, very sensual perfume. It's his turn to kiss the bride. I wonder apprehensively what he's contemplating. He touches her cheek with his lips and whispers distinctly,
100 of these days, my dear.
She smiles expressionlessly, but blushes a little and immediately turns to kiss someone else. During the wedding banquet, I sit at the table reserved for the children in a secluded wing of the restaurant. He, on the other hand, is sitting at the same table as the bride and groom, which confirms to me that he is one of the family. The large Venetian mirror in front of me reflects his image. I chat about this and that, with my table neighbors, enjoying the exquisite dishes of the wedding lunch, and in the meantime, I continue to keep an eye on him. I see he hardly touches any food. At a certain point, I see him get up and walk away, probably to go to the bathroom. When he returns to the room, his face is bruised and contracted, as if returning to his seat would cost him a huge effort. He has certainly rinsed his face, because his hair is slightly wet. He has taken off his tie and unbuttoned the collar of his shirt, opening it on his chest. He exudes a kind of desperate sensuality that the bride certainly perceives, because she turns red and turns away other side. Suddenly, he notices me looking at him through the mirror and stares at me for a moment. His gaze literally makes my stomach tighten. I lower my eyes and try not to look at him again. About 20 minutes pass, and the situation in the room degenerates, as is typical of banquets where too much is eaten and drunk. After several toasts in honor of the spouses, complete with best wishes for male children, someone begins to sing, someone to laugh. Everyone talks too much and too loudly. We are waiting for the lemon and sage sorbet, an excellent digestive, and the inevitable coffee, before going out into the garden and taking part in the outdoor dance. I can hear the little orchestra tuning the instruments. In the general revelry, no one notices that the bride has gotten up and left the room. Instinctively, I turn my gaze towards him. His place is empty. I fight a fierce battle against myself, trying to dominate the impulse to go and look for him. I lose the battle, I jump up and start wandering around the restaurant. He's not in the restaurant lobby, nor in the bathroom. I also enter the men's room and find it deserted. I take the opportunity to touch up my makeup and put the ribbon back in my hair, noting that the blue suits me. As I return to the room, I suddenly see them together in the garden. I recognize the bride from behind. Evidently, she went out into the garden to check on the preparations for the open-air dance, and he joined her. Waltz notes are heard. I know it's not nice to spy on people, but I'm forced to do it. I hide behind a screen near an open window and listen.
"Shall we dance, ma'am?"
he says with a strange tone, which I would define as almost threatening. It encircles her waist. She struggles. He holds her tighter with a sour smile that contracts his jaw.
"They see us, dear. Try to control yourself."
She frees herself with a yank. "You're drunk," she tells him indignantly and walks away with rapid steps. The lady is, or wants to be, not very perceptive. At first, he remains still with his gaze fixed on the sunny garden. Then he turns, crosses the hall, goes out, reaches the car park, opens the door of his car. He leaves. I feel a pang in my heart. I will never see him again. He will take his secret with him. Suddenly, the sun disappears. My day is emptied of all meaning. But no. He bends down to take something from the glove compartment and goes back into the room. His jaw is so tight, I can see his muscles twitching in spasmodic contractions. He takes quick steps towards the Italian garden and enters the vegetal labyrinth. The alarm siren is deafening. I can't stand it anymore. I feel like I have to act immediately. I wonder if by any chance I've gone mad. What do I care about a complete stranger? How I get the idea of meddling in his business? What my parents would think if they saw me right now? All questions that I brush aside in a second, because there is no time to waste. Without hesitation, I leave the room and enter the boxwood walls, which under the summer sun exude a strong smell of crushed insects. After a few idle runs, I finally see him. He is sitting on a stone bench with his shoulders leaning against the thick wall of the hedge and the back of his head thrown back. God be praised. "Hello," I tell him, smiling as if it were normal. He looks up at me without anger, without expression, simply empty.
"Who are you?"
"Ariana. And you?"
"Emmanuel."
"Emmanuel is the groom's brother?"
"It's me."
The matter is taking on grotesque contours.
"I would like to be alone, Ariana."
"I know."
"You know? So excuse me, why don't you leave?"
"I can't leave because you're in danger. In fact, I came on purpose." He stares at me attentively for the first time.
"Who are you?"
he repeats. "Ariana Benvenuti, born in Siena 17 years ago, zodiac sign Aquarius, student at the Piccolomini Classical High School in Siena. My father is your father's business partner, but I guess you don't care much."
"In fact, it doesn't matter at all. Thanks for your concern, and you can leave now."
"No, I'm not leaving. I'm not like the others who pretend nothing happens. They all seem stupid to me, sorry if I tell you, starting with your relatives. It's clear that you need help."
"Look, seriously, but who are you? My guardian angel? A mirage? A simple pain in the ass? Or have I already got high without even realizing it?"
"Don't lie. You've already got high, and you noticed it very well. Before, when you went to the bathroom, it was for that. And then you went to the car to get more, and you came here to finish the job. He is silent, as if to gather his thoughts and calm his nerves. Then he finally speaks.
Ariana, I don't know if in your area it's normal to mind other people's business, but here it's not customary. So please give it a rest, okay? I'm an adult. I know what I'm doing. I know very well what I risk.
With a gun, you would do better.
I hate violence, so it's different. It's like a bad mom digging her stiletto heels into your heart while she's rocking you.
It's a disgusting metaphor.
Listen, are you going or should I go?
He starts to get up from the bench. I have to play for everything. All in. You would be willing to do anything to ruin her wedding day, right? Even making you find yourself dead or in a coma. Touché. He stares at me without answering. I urge, is it some kind of revenge, or do you hope that she will cry for you? He remains silent. I know perfectly well that it's none of my business, but it will do you good to confide in someone. I'm a stranger. There's no danger of me going to talk about it with your parents. The thing dies here. Take advantage of the situation. In a few hours, I will return to Siena, and we will never see each other again. Empty the bag. He relaxes and suddenly depression hits him. He sighs and lowers his head.
Let's say it's a way to avoid the final exam.
Why, don't you want to show up for the oral exam?
Do I seem fit to take the exam?
When would you have the oral exam?
The day after tomorrow.
No, I really don't think you are, and so you will fail.
Obvious.
It's not a big deal. A year is nothing compared to a whole life.
My life lately is a pilgrimage from one intoxication to another. Nothing worth regretting.
It's up to you to change your life. You are beautiful, young, rich, healthy, as long as you avoid ruining your health yourself. There must be something you would like to do. Do it. He leans against the hedge and looks at me with disarming sweetness.
You're late, Adriana.
Ariana. He already forgot my name after less than 5 minutes. Late in what sense?
It will happen anyway, even if I don't exit the game myself. I'm what they call a loser. I have no alternative to the rules of the game.
You're a smart boy, though.
I'm playing bridge without knowing the bidding code. I can only lose.
I finally manage to make him talk. A sense of warm tenderness invades me. I sit next to him on the bench and ask him a question point blank. How long have you been lovers? How long have you been lovers? He remains dumbfounded for a few seconds. Then he responds with a question.
Does it show so much?
It shows a lot, or at least I can see it.
However, lovers is not the correct term.
How should I define you?
I don't know, but certainly not lovers.
Is it that important?
Of course it is. You look like you're at the top of your class. So you know that terminological accuracy is the fundamental prerequisite for semantically correct communication.
What a strange creature. Where does he find the resources to appear lucid in the total chaos of his being? I'll rephrase the question. How long have you been in a relationship?
For almost 3 years.
So much. You are very young.
I've known her forever.
But why her? Why such a more adult woman, and what's more, engaged to your brother?
I can't explain it to you. It would be like describing the sea to a blind man.
I gloss over the unintentionally offensive comparison. Give it a go.
I do not know what to tell you. I just know that she got into my blood.
I take the sachet with two fingers, kind of like this stuff here. I slide it into my bag along with the rest, intending to throw everything in the next bin. Strangely, he doesn't try to stop me.
The comparison doesn't hold up. The sensations the drug gives are false. The ones I felt with her were true.
True? False? What does it mean? Feelings are feelings. Getting high on endorphins is just another way to get high. If you want to know what I think, the lady was good in bed. That's all. With this somewhat naive provocation, I manage to obtain the desired effect. Distract him from his desperation. A flash of anger lights up his gaze.
Listen, Ariana, I don't accept sex lessons from a stranger. If it were as you say, it would work with anyone. Sex is a means of communication. It only works if there is something to communicate. I told her what I had to communicate. I have nothing else to say to anyone. If I survive, I will end up getting married to any woman, to have any career, perhaps to have children, as if this gives meaning to life.
It gives, in fact.
No, it doesn't. And don't ask me why.
Suddenly he falls back into reality. He rests his elbows on his knees and falls with his head in his hands, moaning disconsolately.
The bouquet of white roses. She doesn't know the harm it causes me. It was the bouquet I had chosen for us. I can't stand it.
It is difficult for me to articulate a response to this irrational output. In fact, I am silent while listening to the next one.
God, tell me that's not true. It's terrible. She doesn't know what she's doing. She'll suffer like a dog. I would have given my life to prevent it.
And here, I must admit, the boy surprises me. No one denies that he is handsome and desirable, a very pleasant lover for his dear sister-in-law, but his discomfort and anguish seem grotesque and disproportionate to me. He definitely overestimates himself. What is terrible for a girl of modest social background in marrying a career manager who is also young and attractive like Emmanuel's brother? I would be myself in the lady's place. That woman who is now dancing in the arms of her new husband doesn't really look like she's distressed. I don't understand how he can believe otherwise. I'm looking for a way to make him understand without offending him. You're depressed. That's why you see everything black. If it seems like she's feeling so bad, it's because you're feeling bad. Depression is a serious illness. It should not be underestimated, but it can be cured. I see his curved back. I see his trembling. I can't resist anymore. I lean over him and wrap him in a maternal embrace. I know this will make him cry, but crying is good for those who are desperate. He's warm and throbbing like some puppies. The scent of his hair stuns me. I hide my face on his shoulder. We remain like this for a few minutes in silence. Then I decide to speak. How can you think of seeing your brother's wife every day after what happened between you? And what's more, without being able to confide in anyone? You can't carry on this fiction by keeping everything inside. You risk exploding.
That's exactly how it is, in fact.
You need to get out of here.
That's what I was doing.
Not like that, come on. I have a better idea.
Which idea?
You could apply to transfer to my school. Next year I will have the exam too. We will prepare for it together. It will be fun. Don't worry about accommodation. My parents will gladly host you if I ask them to. They know that I have my head on my neck, and then I'm the only child of elderly parents. They never say no to me. You'll like them, you'll see. They are simple, smart people.
You're really kind, Ariana, but I can't accept it,
he says, wiping his nose with the back of his hand. I offer him my handkerchief. Why? He blows his nose and remains silent. I translate his thoughts. Because you can't last so long away from her? He nods his head, yes. All I have to do is be ruthless and sink the knife all the way in. She has now chosen someone else. She has excluded you from her life. There's nothing you can do about it anymore. Suddenly, he raises his head with a strange light in his eyes, as if comforted by a crazy perspective.
It's not true. I can still be her lover.
The addiction is more serious than expected. I am not prepared to deal with this situation, but I do not intend to give in. I respond impulsively. Look, let's make a deal. 1 year, 1 year only. The time for a detox treatment, even less. Then, if you want, you can go back to her. Prostitute what's left of your dignity, and continue making yourself ridiculous. I was cruel. I'll sweeten the pill a bit. You are probably right. There will still be a place for you in her bed. You are very beautiful. She will not say no to you. He shakes his head with a sour smile.
It wasn't her bed I wanted. But that's okay. That's okay too.
Not now. Listen to me. You are too weak to be able to do it. And she has a clear advantage over you. She has just married your brother, who, among other things, seems to me to be a guy with a lot of talent, and for some time she will be a devoted little wife. In a year, it will be different. You will be fine, and you will be able to look for her again, but from a position of strength. She will have missed you and will be a year older, which at her age matters a lot. Perhaps in the meantime, she will have become a mother, and I assure you that taking care of the dirty diapers of a brat while your husband goes around on business and plays tennis with his friends significantly reduces the charm of marriage. You will be in an advantageous position. You will have the game in hand.
I don't think so. Antonia can have children. She's undergoing treatments, but it doesn't mean they'll work.
He laughs to keep from crying.
God, all we need is the brat.
I insist. Give yourself another chance, please. What do you have to lose? He remains silent for a long time, immersed in painful reflection. Then he says,
Maybe you're right. You're also right about my brother. I always underestimated him, but in the end he won.
Why didn't it occur to you to confide in him? I think he loves you. He looks at me like I'm crazy.
Are you joking? And what was I supposed to tell him? That I was fucking his woman and did everything I could to take her away from him?
Yes, exactly like that. He would have been mad as hell, but then he would have understood. He's an intelligent man, from what I can see, and he would have understood that it wasn't just a sex story, or at least not for you. Your desperation is too obvious.
Not even for her,
he says dryly, annoyed by the fact that I doubt it. All the more reason he would have understood. He shakes his head.
You're crazy.
Maybe, Emmanuel, but no more than all of you. He is silent for a long time.
It's also strange,
he says at the end. He looks at me and for the fourth time asks me,
Who are you? I mean, who are you, really?
I don't answer him.
It doesn't matter. So much the better if you don't exist.
The orchestra is playing a waltz beyond the boxwood wall. I stand up and hold out my hand. Let's dance, do you want to?
A waltz? Are you kidding me?
I'll teach you. I put my arm around him and show off a few dance steps. He shakes his head, but lets himself be led docilely. You're very good, I tell him. I laugh like a child, without realizing that it's too early for joy. Distracted by my happiness, I almost forgot that he suffers a lot. Suddenly, in fact, my laughter hits him like a slap. He abruptly releases himself from my embrace.
Leave me.
I left you.
I mean, leave me alone, please. I don't know what I'm doing. I must be crazy. My place is here. She will need me sooner or later.
And how do you plan to help her? By committing suicide?
I actually have to stop. I did it, I'll do it again.
Half an hour ago you didn't think so.
Half an hour ago was half an hour ago.
What makes you think you can quit?
I will succeed.
We had just made a pact. We said that—
Please, Ariana, stop. You were kind and I thank you for everything, seriously. But please don't be intrusive.
Intrusive. This word hits me like a punch in the diaphragm, leaving me equally breathless. I, Ariana Benvenuti, a person so discreet as to even be considered unfriendly, was defined as intrusive by a complete stranger. I have never felt so humiliated in my life. I straighten my skirt. Excuse me. I turn my back on him and walk through the vegetal corridor, devastated by an inexpressible sense of unease. Exiting a labyrinth is not that difficult. The labyrinth is topologically equivalent to a circular room with one or more doors. It is therefore inevitable to reach a door by always following the internal wall of the room. The simplest procedure consists in placing your right hand on the right wall of the labyrinth at the entrance to the labyrinth and choosing the only path that allows you to never remove your hand from the chosen wall until you reach one of the possible other exits, or the start point. If the labyrinth has only one exit, the algorithm leads to a dead end, from which one returns to the starting point by simply continuing to follow the chosen wall. I scrupulously stick to the studied rule, and in a short time I reach the exit. I see the sunny garden in front of me, which for a moment dazzles me, giving me a sense of dizziness. I clearly grasp the tremendous void that I am leaving behind. I'm about to walk across the pavement of the path that leads to the restaurant when I hear a voice coming from the labyrinth.
Ariana.
I stop and listen. I take a few more steps along the path, but the voice calls me louder.
Ariana.
I decide to answer. What's up?
I'm lost.
It is a fact that my sense of humor almost always intervenes to destroy the pathos of dramatic situations. Tragedy, in my life, always tends to transform into operetta. The force of humor drags all the weights afloat, forcing them to remain on the surface. Superficiality is a virtue, if combined with rationality. Despite being mortally offended, I burst out laughing at the thought of my Rimbo wandering through the corridors of the labyrinth in vain search for the exit. I know well that I should reply, "Make do on your own." Especially since our hero had entered that trap on purpose to die like a rat. A dark instinct tells me I'm doing it all wrong as I turn and retrace my steps. My rationality is lacking. I urgently need to review the ABCs of Greek mythology. And anyway, now instinct has taken over. Wait for me. I'll come to look for you. I put my right hand on the right wall, following the usual path I should find him easily. Instead, I wander around in circles for 5 minutes.
Where are you?
He exclaims from somewhere in the labyrinth. Stay calm, I'm coming. Another 10 laps in vain. I understand that something is wrong. What are you doing? I shout back to him.
I'm looking for the exit.
I sigh in resignation. That boy doesn't understand the most obvious things. Emmanuel, wherever you are, stay still. If you keep moving, I will never find you. I'll start over again. You will come across a point where there will be only one path to cross the crisscrossing walls. This will be the turning point. After crossing this point, you can walk backwards or forwards. I find the turning point. After another 5 minutes, I finally come across him. Or rather, I stumble upon him, sitting on the floor behind a corner and curled up like a child, with his face in his knees. I stop with my arms folded in front of him. Get up.
Excuse me?
I don't need your excuses.
You're right, I can't do it now.
Perfect, I see you finally figured it out. Now let's move. My parents will be wondering what happened to me. He gets up with the distraught expression of someone experiencing withdrawal. I pretend not to see it. Follow me. I walk in front of him. The small fresh leaves of the protosporum caress the palm of my right hand as I proceed confidently towards the exit. Suddenly he grabs my left hand and forces me to turn around, staring into my eyes with absolute desperation.
Take me away, please. Take me away from here.
I nod without answering and continue to proceed confidently towards the exit of the labyrinth, guiding him by the hand, as one does with the blind.
Vieni, vieni. Niente più ti lega a questi luoghi, neanche questi fiori azzurri. Via, via, neanche questo tempo nuovo paese, pieno di musica e di uomini che ti sono piaciuti.
It's wonderful, it's wonderful, it's wonderful. Good luck, my baby, it's wonderful, it's wonderful, it's wonderful. I dream of you, chips, chips.
A strawberry cone.
Where are you going, love? Stay here.
We have to get up. My parents are waiting for us at noon.
How boring, always with these schedules to respect, even on Sundays. And then it's only 9 o'clock.
I don't like being late, you know. But you can sleep a little longer. I have to shower, shave. Go back to bed, you look tired.
Should we tell the whole honeymoon story?
All day by day, and project slides too.
God no, what a banality.
Banality why? It's a way like any other to share beautiful things with loved ones.
Should I also mention that I vomited throughout the cruise? It wasn't a great experience.
We'll gloss over this. It's strange though, you've never suffered from seasickness. Maybe you should get a checkup.
It's nothing, don't worry. It's the fault of those long waves. Will you wake me up when you're ready?
Sure, my love. There's the congested traffic on Sunday mornings and the suffocating heat typical of the month of July. Construction sites are almost everywhere. You can't move. My city is unrecognizable, distorted by senseless changes to the road system. The urban planning criteria of this council are incomprehensible to any person with normal common sense, if only for the fact of having altered the perfect geometry of the original Roman camp. Even if I consider optimism a necessary exercise of rationality, I admit that crossing the center of Turin has become torture for me. Piazza Castello full of shelters and barriers, the Cartesian elegance of Piazza Vittorio distorted by strange rounded objects that emerge from the original porphyry pavement, Corso Vittorio ruined by the barriers of the so-called light metro. It's all absolutely horrendous for someone like me, accustomed to what was once the little parlor of Europe. I can't imagine what other horrors I'll have to get used to. The annoyance combines with the sultry heat to make this situation unbearable for me. Luckily, the Saab has an excellent air conditioner. I stop at yet another red light. Don't keep the air conditioning vent pointed directly at your face, Antonia. You'll get sick.
But it's terribly hot.
Then don't complain if you get a cough. While we're at it, you should really get into the idea of wearing a seatbelt.
You know I can't stand it. I'd rather pay the fine.
Saab is also protesting, do you hear?
What a drag these suites are.
She takes the belt and passes it behind the seat, inserting the hook into the appropriate slot to stop the beep-beep. Typical of Antonia. You won't be able to piss me off, you know? I am experiencing a magical moment. But don't take too much advantage of it. During the cruise to Greece, she relaxed and enjoyed herself. Her health was completely restored. Physically, she flourished again. She put on a couple of kilos in the right places. She is tan and full of small freckles which look very flattering on her. However, she has not yet fully returned to her senses. She is often distracted, indifferent, apathetic, even in bed. I think she's worried about not being able to give me a child. I purposely never touch that button. Maybe we will try to adopt one, even if in Piedmont it is almost impossible to do so. I don't know why. But we Italians enjoy the singular privilege of always finding the wrong people in the wrong place in all the main control sectors. In particular, this is an endemic disease of the public sector, and the so-called social services are the best proof of this. However, Antonia seems happy, satisfied,
as if she had suddenly achieved her goal. Her perpetual restlessness has disappeared. She lets herself float in a lazy torpor, like a cat curled up in the sun. If on the one hand this pleases me, on the other it makes me suspicious, because it's not like her. I'll try to test the waters. When will you start university again?
At the end of September, there is time.
Aren't you taking it a little too easy?
In what sense?
In the sense that you should prepare for the competition, right?
I should, but it's all parceled out, you know. I quote my rapporteur's words. You're good, Antonia, but without a party card, we wouldn't even hire Dante Alighieri.
A really good example.
It's not her fault, they're all like that.
Well, take the party card.
Oh, please, Michael, I would feel ridiculous.
I'm serious.
Do you know the legendary Kalina?
Who?
The one from Professor Perona's conference.
Yes, I remember, the art history one. Perona had built the entire exhibition on the discovery of an alleged Garcino, but Kalina dismantled the attribution in 10 minutes.
Precisely him. Kalina will never win a university competition, precisely because he is too good. He has everyone against him. If he wants to succeed, he must go abroad.
And why doesn't he go?
Maybe he will. For now, he works with private galleries and is a consultant for an important antiques dealer.
Coming back to us, love, if you need a party card, there's no problem.
Thanks, no.
She abruptly interrupts the speech, crosses her arms, and closes herself in a stubborn silence that does not bode well. I take advantage of the Grand Madre parking lot to stop the engine and start a conversation. I turn to her and look at her seriously. Antonia, is there something wrong?
No. Why?
You're weird. I see you as absent, unmotivated. You never have anything to say to me. You no longer communicate. Once upon a time you talked for hours. Now I'm the one who has to take the words out of your mouth. Does this seem normal to you for two who just returned from their honeymoon?
What are you saying? I am fine.
Look, I'm not taking away any of your freedoms. The fact that you are now my wife doesn't change anything. If the university in Turin doesn't work out, you can try Professor Mastarda. Write to him. Tell him that you would like to work for him. It was your dream, wasn't it?
But it's very far away.
I know it's far away, but you could work part-time.
Michael, we've been married for a few days and you already want to get rid of me?
No, love. I just want to see you happy.
But I'm happy.
I see you're happy. But I find you strange. Even.
Even in bed, I know. Don't worry, these are the aftermath of the operation. I'm still a little scared.
It's normal. You need your time to recover.
Look, but we can't stay here without air conditioning. This heat is killing me. Would you get me an ice cream?
Yes, of course. I parked right next to our favorite ice cream shop. Turin's ice cream makers are masters, each with his own unmistakable style, like the great painters. He can be compared to a Tintoretto.
Get some for your relatives, too.
Good idea. Wait for me in the car. I'll leave the windows down for you. What ice cream do you want?
A strawberry cone.
But you never like strawberries.
I know, but now I feel like it. I've changed my tastes.
I return with one hand occupied by a packet of ice cream and the other by the strawberry cone, which is melting on the cuff of my shirt. I hand it to her through the window.
Thank you. What taste did you take for your family?
Fruit and cream.
What, just cream? No chocolate?
No, my parents don't like chocolate.
Emmanuel likes it.
Ah, right. How stupid, I haven't told you yet.
What?
Wait a minute, I'm going to pay.
What, did he leave?
Yes, for Tuscany.
And the exam?
He didn't show up for the oral exam.
But why?
You couldn't follow him because you had wedding preparations and he didn't open a book. Now don't feel guilty, huh? You did what you could. It's his fault. My brother is crazy, you know.
But where?
I told you, in Tuscany, near Siena. He says he needs a change of scenery, but he doesn't tell it correctly. The truth is that he had a crush on that blonde girl at our wedding.
But who?
You don't know her. She's the daughter of Benvenuti, a business partner of Dad's. Her name is Ariana. He went to stay with her. He says for a while, but I guess we won't see him again anytime soon.
But when?
I told you, he met her at our wedding and 2 days later he left, while we were in Corfu.
And your parents?
Obviously they were furious about the exam. But then they calmed down a bit when Ariana came to visit them,
She is a respectable, pretty, and reassuring girl. And she is also intelligent. She knew how to hit the right buttons. She swore that she will prepare for the final exam together with Emmanuel, and she gave her word of honor that next year he will be promoted. Better for you, right? This way you will no longer have to follow him around to make him study.
And your parents let him go?
My brother is now an adult, Antonia. He can do whatever he wants. And then, I tell you honestly, it's better this way. I was starting to get worried about him. He's pale. He has bad dark circles under his eyes. You can tell he's not well. In my opinion, Michelle is still involved, even if he would never tell me. That girl has something I don't like. Ariana, on the other hand, seems to me like someone with her head on her neck. All's well that ends well. Let's not think about it anymore. The only one who took it badly is Teresa. Since he left, she always has a funeral face. Who would have thought that that woman was so fond of him? But love, why aren't you more careful? You spilled all the ice cream on your skirt.
Like the ceiling of a bombed church. He looks at me with cold detachment, shaking his head slightly. I told you, little sister, I told you. Frederick's prophecy came true. The bomb exploded with me sitting on top. For days, weeks after Emmanuel's departure, I wandered blindly through the tunnels of my life, groping for the way out as if in the meanders of a labyrinth. He was everywhere, invisible but implacable. I could feel his breathing around every corner. I hoped he would find me and finish me once and for all, in a rush of pity that I knew I didn't deserve. I would have welcomed that end with joy. But he hid, played with me like a cat with a mouse. I continuously heard inside me the heartbreaking bleating of a drowning lamb. I was devastated. Every morning, as soon as Michael left to go to work, I would fall with my face into the pillow, hoping that he would telepathically sense my call. It was atrocious to enter that silent house, pass by that empty room with his posters on the walls, walk along the river and no longer see him sitting on the bank, return to that deserted barn and find his jar of Nutella still half full in a corner, smell that smell, the smell of cut grass in his hair. My life was reduced to a continuous escape. I ran away from one source of pain only to stumble upon another, even more unbearable. Once I found a cassette still inserted in the stereo in the barn and mechanically pressed the start button. That heartbreaking and desperate voice screaming marijuana threw me back to the moment I heard it for the first time, with such violence that I fell on my back into the hay, holding my hands to my heart. I was about to have a heart attack. I never went back to the barn. I didn't miss sex with him. Never before had I realized more than in that moment that what I had with Emmanuel had not been sex, but a ritual of self-immolation to the divinity that every day demanded my soul and my body as a sacrifice. I couldn't rebel. I couldn't do anything but climb the steps of the ladder that led to the altar. Let me fall into the hay, cling to his hair, close my eyes so as not to be incinerated by his frightening beauty and dissolve in a nameless pleasure. I had loved madly every moment spent in the arms of that divine adolescent beast. I have never been a connoisseur of music. I appreciated it superficially and listened to it as a pastime like many. But Emmanuel, who loved it deeply, wanted to share it with me in all its intensity. He had a violent yet sweet way of forcing me to do so, literally thrusting it into me with every pelvic thrust, every look, every sigh, every moan whispered to my ear while we made love immersed in his music. A wonderful and chilling experience, capable of destroying a person's psyche forever. The result is that now I perceive the power of music with a sense of intimate upheaval, but all this is of no use to me, as I no longer have anyone to share it with. Every time I feel a sense of painful emptiness and heartbreaking regret. I concluded that mediocre people should avoid sublime experiences. Of all the memories, two in particular haunted me. One afternoon, while they were lying in the hay after making love, he had put on one of his favorite songs, a long song lasting 7 minutes and 15 seconds. He lay down next to me and hummed it all into my mouth, looking into my eyes, stroking my hair, and alternating small sensual kisses with the words of the song. I was in disbelief, overwhelmed by a sense of unspeakable amazement in the face of sensations that I didn't think I could experience. While I vaguely realized that the gaze of the gods is slightly cross-eyed, their fingers brush without contact, and their breath smells of peach jam and violets like Alexander's sweat. When you blurt away, they could be like the friends and neighbors you. I held my breath the whole time so as not to expose my human nature, aware of the sacredness of that moment. The god had stolen 7 minutes and 15 seconds from immortality to give them to a common mortal. The other memory was linked to those 3 incredible days we spent in Tuscany. The evening before Emmanuel's surreal marriage proposal, in the context of the open-air Templar Abbey, the farmhouse had organized an evening of dancing on the veranda adjacent to the restaurant room. There was no orchestra present, but a simple DJ, a boy of around 20 years old, who tried to offer musical pieces suitable for a clientele who was no longer very young. However, the boy tried to avoid 2 popular choices, and at one point he put on Led Zeppelin's Stairway to Heaven. Immediately, Emmanuel, sitting in front of me, smiled, stood up, held out his hand, invited me to dance, and took me to the veranda. Rather than hugging me, he delicately wrapped me in two large angel wings, rested his cheek on my hair, and remained like that, with his eyes closed, for the entire time of the song. Everyone looked at us, but he remained completely indifferent to the judgment of others. The sensation I felt was indescribable. His embrace had nothing to do with sex or carnality. They were 8 minutes of pure heaven. But now all this, as superhumanly beautiful as it had been, was no longer important. I had always known that I was destined to lose that angel, that young god. It wasn't him that I missed, but my baby. I missed his eyes, his smile, his music, his inconclusive chatter, his funny imitations. Oh, to be able to see him, be able to feel him, watch him exist. See him exist in any way, even with another woman, even in the arms of another woman. I would have forced myself to love that Ariana if he had loved her, as long as it was possible for me to see him again. His mobile number was deactivated. In the grip of a paroxysm of unbearable pain, I obtained his new address, the telephone number of that house. I wrote to him, but my letters were intercepted. I found the strength to call and ask for him. A female voice replied with polite firmness that I had dialed the wrong number. Then, suddenly, my psyche exploded into 1,000 pieces, and desperation was replaced by the paralysis of resignation, that sort of catalepsy, into which the prey of big cats fall when they realize they are doomed. From that moment on, I no longer felt anything, and now I am clinically dead. There would be nothing wrong with that, if only I didn't have to pretend to be alive. I know well that it's better for him this way. There's no room for two on the raft, and it's right that he should be the one to save himself. But I don't know how to continue living. It's ridiculous to think that in these conditions I can take care of the house, of classical philology, of rising prices, of my marital duties. My God, marital duties. At least one thing Emmanuel taught me. There is nothing more unnatural than sex between strangers. Every now and then I turn to look at the long trail of blood that I leave behind me. I see it clearly, but no one else sees it, like Orestes with the Erinyes. Like him, I'm going crazy. No one listens to my cries. I am voiceless as in dreams of impotence. Everyone takes it for granted that I must be happy. Everyone would consider me crazy if they knew that I would like to be dead. Dead, dead, dead in every single moment of my life. I feel like the ceiling of a bombed-out church. I would like to dissolve like smoke. I would like to be able to float in Michael's life for a little longer. Disappear slowly. Become more and more transparent. Make my dissolution imperceptible to him. And in the meantime, leave an ectoplasm to have tea with his family and cheer for him when he plays tennis. Michael is distracted. He wouldn't notice the difference. One day, when he turns around, he simply wouldn't see me anymore. I have to give him time to get used to my disappearance. But to do that, I need the only person capable of destroying me without killing me. Frederic. He is the solution. He became more cautious after my operation, but the rough simplicity of his way of having sex remained the same. There is no pretense of feeling, nothing but his body. It's not sex, it's not pleasure, it's nothing that resembles love. It's like experiencing the fury of the elements, flying in a vortex without ever touching the bottom, floating far from the ground in a rarefied atmosphere that does not transmit sounds, where I can scream at the top of my lungs without anyone hearing me. From above, I see shreds of fiction below me, lifeless automatons, ridiculous puppets, impossible to regret. If I close my eyes, I hear the archaic and lulling rhythm of the choriambic dimeter, a sign that Aristophanes has forgiven me. Frédéric manages to create a void inside me. The nothingness he gives me has become my everything. The Last Miracle. Emmanuel manifests himself in me in the form of physical pleasure. I believe it is the elementary way in which my body reacts to the joy of his presence. Like a dog can't help but wag its tail at the sight of its owner. So when I woke up, stuffed with sedatives, and felt that unmistakable sensation, I had little doubt about its meaning. I get dressed immediately and go to the visit I booked yesterday.
We did it, ma'am. Congratulations. I won't deny that I wasn't hoping for it, but the treatments worked.
He takes off his latex gloves, smiling, and throws them into the dustbin.
How many months have you been married?
A month and a half.
So when you got married, you were already at least 3 weeks pregnant, do you know?
Are you sure, doctor?
Very sure. However, to be on the safe side, we will do an ultrasound.
The ultrasound confirms the good doctor's assumptions. What the gynecologist cannot know is that Michael, careful as usual, stopped taking precautions only after the wedding. I leave the studio, walking a few meters above the ground. It's a beautiful day. I venture into the Valentino Park and go along the Po. Observe the fishermen, the slow and precise gestures with which they bend the long rods backwards and then cast the lines into the water. I take off my shoes and, being careful not to step on any syringes, I walk across the grass to a group of tanned rowers who are beaching their boats. A naive painter portrays the Arimo on the opposite hill. I stop to observe her work. Then I go down the bank and, clinging to a young willow, I let my weight carry me in a circle around its trunk. It's a childhood gesture that I had forgotten. I sit on the lawn, inhale the scent of the grass, and place my hands on my belly with a sense of deep well-being. Everything is fine. He's here. We're together again. And this time I won't let anyone take him away from me. Anyone. It's over. No more tea at 5 in the afternoon, no more Sundays of family lunches and card games, no more nights of useless sex, no more pretenses, no more mystifications, no more lies, but only his music inside and outside the silence. It's his last miracle. It costs me my life, but I won't have a moment's regret. I close my eyes and fall asleep in the warm late August sun. Michael comes home from work and finds me sitting on a suitcase in the hall, surrounded by my luggage.
Hi, love. What are you doing there?
At first he thinks it's a joke, then he realizes that I'm serious. He bends over me.
What is happening?
I know I should cry, but there's not even a tear in my eye. I close all my shutters hermetically. Michael's words barely penetrate my mind, reaching my distant and muffled ears.
You must be tired. Your face is terrible. Go and rest.
I look up and from a sidereal distance I tell him the news. A moment of suspension. He falls into a frenetic dissonance of,
"But how? But what? But why?"
Then he asks me a stupid question. I answer him with a pale smile. "How, Emmanuel, who?" "Your brother, Michael."